KDFT, Houston.
I'm for thumbs up, thumbs down, Mandy's favorite segment. Boom!
Yeah. All right.
Welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our host from Children at Risk, a policy expert, Mandy Kimball, and Chief Operating Officer, Dr. Katie McConnell. What do you have on tap today?
Happy Monday! Thanks, Letty.
Happy Monday to you, too, and happy Election Day Eve.
Happy Election Day Eve. That's right. That was exciting. Bob, unfortunately, isn't here today at the radio show. He is traveling from Austin, actually. He's been there all day meeting with TEA. He's been at a big meeting talking about public education. So we're excited to have Katie McConnell today.
Always happy to fill in with you on Monday.
Lady show. Always fun.
That's
always
right. Fun. A lady show. I didn't know that was a thing, but I really like it, especially with all of our guests that we have here in studio with us today.
It's true. Well, and it is going to be an exciting week, the anticipation that everyone has about tomorrow.
I was going to say Election Day.
I've been getting texts, actually, on the way here. I got a text from someone saying, have you voted today? Like, not anyone I know. You know what I mean? Like,
stranger, have you
like voted? Some platform was like, hey, you're registered in Fort Bend. Well, you know where to vote, right?
Right.
Yes, got it. I'm
it's
excited.
Been great. There's been so much activity on the news we've been following. Of course, I'm happy to get some regular commercials back. I will be perfectly honest.
But people have been doing early voting. I like to Absolutely. Vote on the day personally, and I'm lucky because the place where I vote is at my kid's school. So it starts at 7. So the three of us go in, vote, and then like, see you later. But they get their sticker.
What
like,
a great example of you to set for your boys.
I want them to have the sticker in the classroom.
That's right. So they can show off just a little bit. What better way to show off than to show that you exercised your civic duty and voted?
There you go. That's great. And so then today we are also going to be, or this week is the Children at Risk hosting our education summit on Thursday, November 8th. People can still sign up there at childrenatrisk.org, right?
Yes, absolutely. I was going to say it is going to be a fantastic lineup. It's Thursday morning from 8 until noon, I believe. Details are on our website. We would encourage you, if you're interested in the current state of education, both in HISD and around our city, please join us. It's going to be a great event. We have Superintendent from HISD will be talking and presenting. We know there's been a lot of conversation around her position lately, and there were some changes that were made and then
we talked about it on unmade. The show.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be great to get her perspective and hear her motivation to continue to drive HISD forward.
It'll be a great event. All right. Really so I guess now it's time to talk about our awesome show today.
Yes. So gosh, we've really gotten ahead of things. Sorry. So for the next hour, we will have a chance to talk to the director of our Center for Parent and Family Wellbeing, Edith Rahimian, about the significance of the number 87. 87%.
87%. What could it mean? Stay tuned and find out. And then after Data Head, we'll have Dr. Bob calling in. Like I mentioned, he's on the road coming back from Austin. But he wants to share his perspective and information around education.
I can't help but think it must have been a good day if he spent it with TEA and he's still willing to talk education. That's exciting. Then after Dr. Bob, we will have Stanley Leone Jr. He will be calling in, and he is an advocate and author of the book No Place Like Hope, A Journey Through Poverty. And we're going to talk to Stanley a little bit about his story growing up in poverty, as well as some of the work that he's doing now to help children across the country that are in poverty.
Awesome. And then today on our social conscience scale, we want you to call in and share your opinion. Thumbs up, thumbs down. And the topic today is, should computers, phones, screens, pretty much all those electronics, tablets, whatever you call it, whatever device it is, should they be banned from a child's bedroom? Should we allow these computers? Should we allow phones, iPads, all of that jazz in a child's bedroom.
Lots of interesting perspectives on this. So I'll be curious to hear from our experts that we have here in studio, as well as some that we know will be calling in, as well as our listeners. And our final guest today will be everybody's favorite pediatrician, Dr. Claire Bikini, and several of her pediatric residents. We have Anne Young and Rachel Oliver here in studio with us, and they will be talking just about some children's health issues that are trending in the news.
There we go.
We had a little debrief before, and I was already learning things that maybe I didn't want to know. So it'll be very insightful.
There you go. And like, as you mentioned, they are here. How are you doing, Dr. Bikini?
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Great. And Rachel, Anne, excited to be here?
Definitely. Thanks for having us.
No pressure, but people love to hear from pediatricians and what's going on with kids. What do they need to know? So it'll be a great conversation. It'll be awesome. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for listening. Welcome to Growing Up in America on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio, a discussion on our children, public policy, politics, and our future. And how do we as a nation do when it comes to taking care of all of our kiddos? Every week we aim to fill the same 58 minutes with a lively discussion on the status of children in America from experts on the quality of life for America's children. This is Mandy Kimball, and we have Dr. Katie McConnell, in the house today.
Here in the flesh, ready to do some learning.
Yeah.
So excited to be here.
It's true, though. You learn every show.
Every single show,
absolutely. Different issues from the great people that are calling in. And, you know, we actually have someone that we didn't mention earlier, but we have a special treat since tomorrow is Election Day. We're going to have Stan Stonart coming in and talking about what's going on in Houston. So let's tap into Stan. Hey there, Stan.
This is Edith.
Oh, hi, Edith.
Hi, Edith.
Well, we'll go ahead and jump right to Data Head then.
He's not here. That's all right. So maybe he'll call in later. It's good. All right. So Edith is here for Data Head, right?
And do you want me to sing your intro song for you, Edith? She blinded us with science. Nope, too much. Okay. So Edith is calling in today to talk about the significance of the number 87%. Mandy, do you have any predictions what she might be talking about today?
I have no idea. Give it to us, Edith.
87%. So 87% of likely voters believe that protecting children and families is an American value.
Oh, wow. That's
This was the number that came out of a recent research that was done by Lake Research Partners from September 29th through October 4th of 2018. They surveyed 1,000 likely 2018 voters nationwide.
Very interesting. And of those 1,000 voters, 87% said that protecting children and families is an American value.
Well, and I understand that. Everyone feels that children are valued to America. I think where the disconnect is how does that play out, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there's other countries and states before they pass laws or policies, legislation. The number one question is, and how does this impact our children?
Many countries right. have mm-hmm. that person. And like children's czar, so to speak.
But, well, and I think that yes. shows that you truly value our children. And I think here in America, we say that. But then I see some things get passed or the topics or conversations that are going on. And I feel like it's the complete opposite.
I would agree with you on that one. But it's good to have to know this information and know that for us as child advocates, as we're going in, that to know that most people value the same things that we're working on, right? That most people really value protecting children and families, and they want to do what's best for the community.
Exactly.
Edith, when you were looking at the study, I'm sorry I missed the first part of what you said. Could you tell us again who conducted this study?
So it was Lake Research Partners that conducted the study, and the Women's Refugee Commission is who published it and put it out. The study was actually done to learn more about the findings on voters' attitudes towards refugees and asylum policies. So they asked several different questions. And so as I mentioned, 87% agree that protecting children and families is an American value. And then throughout the survey, it looks like they went through and asked other questions that were less general and a little bit more specific. So the U.S. should not turn away people who are fleeing violent and desperate conditions and need our help. And so the response to that statement dropped to 66% of voters agreed.
Very interesting. And we know that that is such a hot topic nationwide right now, but especially in Texas. So it's good to be hearing some of the feedback from research being done for voters or likely voters that we know will be participating in tomorrow's very important election, if they haven't already, right? Because we do know that so many people have already exercised their right to vote in this midterm election.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
And I have a question, not to put y'all on the spot, but Dr. Bikini and Rachel and Ann, there have been a lot of ads going on, and healthcare is something special. Are y'all happy with messages or conversations around healthcare as people go to vote, or do you think it has received enough attention?
I think it's a really critical topic that a lot of people are really worried about in this next election. And so I think it's good that people are talking about it. I don't think we've been talking about it as much around kids as we probably should have. But I think it's very good that it's made it into a lot of commercials, a lot of debates. I think it's good that people are talking about it instead of ignoring it. I think it's good.
Good deal.
We've been talking with Edith Rahimian, Director of Center for Parenting and Family Wellbeing. Thanks so much for calling in today, Edith.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Take
Bye,
care.
Edith.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And I think now we do have Stan on the line. Let's see. Good afternoon, Stan. How are you doing today?
I am good.
Great. Thanks for calling in. As you could be hearing, we were talking about how tomorrow is Election Day and people are getting excited. Any kind of updates or perspective that you would like to provide?
Well, on Election Day, you must vote where your precinct is voting. So go to harrisvotes.com, and you can click on Find Your Poll and Personal Ballot, and you can there you can look yourself up. You can find your personal ballot, which is only going to be 3 or 4 tabloid pages long versus the 18 pages of every race in the county. And then also we'll tell you right where you must vote on Election Day.
Oh, that's really important.
That is important. I think so. We've seen so many people early voting, and I think maybe a lot of people have forgotten that on Election Day, you do have to go to your designated polling location. That's a great reminder.
That would be really unfortunate to be like, I'm going to go vote today, and you go stand in your hour and a half line, and then you get to the front, and they say, I'm sorry, right?
The lines will be shorter on Election Day because, unlike early voting where we had 46 locations, we have 739 locations on Election Day.
Oh,
so your own precinct is smaller. But if you wait to the last hour or two of Election Day, guess what? There'll probably be some lines. But,
because other people will be waiting.
Exactly. Procrastinators always show up at the very end.
So this is Stan, and he is the county clerk, and he's saying, hey, there's multiple places out there. The line, don't let that be a deterrent, because there's numerous places, and we can get in and out. Unless you're a procrastinator, then I guess you're used to waiting in those long lines at the end of the day.
Exactly.
That's great. Well, thanks so much, Stan. We appreciate you calling in.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. So that's really good information.
So good. I had no idea that there are 739 polling locations in Harris County on Election Day.
That's a lot.
That's so many. No excuses. And I'm looking at you like you're going to make an excuse. And I know of all people in this building right now, you're the last one. You absolutely will go vote tomorrow. But it's just, I think that's really important. That's such a big factor, because we have been seeing the lines on the news, and people are going to wake up tomorrow and think, oh, I'm going to be late to work. But not necessarily.
That's right.
Because there's only a certain amount of people that can go to your 739 locations.
And there is a law in Texas that you're supposed to be able to have time off to vote from work, is right? If you work like a 12-hour shift, you're supposed to get 2 hours off. So talk to your job. I think it's really important. I love seeing the enthusiasm and the excitement around this election. But I just think it's important for people to figure out how to get to the polls tomorrow.
I think that's exactly right. Very good point, Dr.
And we understand everyone is busy, right? It's like, hey, how are you? How's it going? People are like, oh, busy. Life is busy. Okay, so that's old news, because everyone is busy all the time. time. And it's really, again, what do you value?
That's
and
right.
ensure you take the time to go out and vote. All super important, and we can do it.
And maybe a quick reminder of the exact timing of when the polls are open tomorrow, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. I looked it up yesterday.
There you go.
Very Great. Good reminder. Thank you. Gosh, we're all full of midterm excitement these days. There's so much going on. There are so many races that so many people are paying such close attention to. We are absolutely thrilled to see this going on in Harris County, but across the country, really. It's very important.
I belong with you. You belong with me, my sweetheart.
All right.
We know what that song means. It could only be one person on the line.
Dr. Bob Sanborn, how are you doing today?
Good, guys. How y'all doing? You carrying the show?
We're trying.
We're having fun. Of course you're missed, like always, when you're not here, but so glad that you're able to call in. How was your day?
Good, very good. So I've been up in Austin today, and I've been meeting with people at the Texas Education Agency and superintendents from all over the state. And the idea is focusing on, you know, all this testing that happens in our state and all the grades, the A through F grades. And so this was a whole discussion on where we're going with these grades.
And what is your takeaway? So I'm sure that there were several people that had a lot of insight, right, and input. So when you talk about testing, some people are true believers that that's what we need and that's how we can compare the apples to apples and that's where the accountability is. And then you have other folks who say it's not allowing teachers to teach, that it's really more about than just testing. Was it a robust conversation, Dr. Bob?
Yeah, it was. And, you know, the real specific was the A through F grades. And, you know, historically, as you know, Katie and Mandy, the superintendents have not liked this idea that they would be graded, right? As superintendents, that their districts, that their schools would get a letter grade. But I think the tide has turned, right? We have been very supportive of really letting parents know how our schools are doing so that parents can become engaged, either by choosing which school they go to or once they're in a school deciding to make that school better. And I feel the tide turning in terms of superintendents sort of getting it. And now, almost begrudgingly, but still saying, okay, this is going to happen. Now, how do we make it super fair? And how do we make it work for us? How do we make it work for students? And how do we make it work for parents? And you have to remember, you know, sometimes we vilify superintendents, right? Mm-hmm. But in the end, superintendents are doing it just like we are. They're doing it for kids. You know, their life has been devoted to making life better for children. And they don't like to get a grade. I mean, Mandy, you and I wouldn't like to get a grade. Katie, you don't want to get a grade. But the reality is, for parents, we're not grading the teachers or the superintendents. We're letting people know the quality of the schools. But more importantly, we're letting people know how those schools can be better.
I also think the fact that the Texas Education Agency is willing to engage in this, this also reflects on them, right? How good are the schools that they are supervising statewide, right? How are we doing as a collective whole? So the fact that they're a leading part of this conversation is encouraging, that we're trying to get the accurate information out to parents.
Well,
yeah, I think that's a good point, Katie, because historically, the Texas Education Agency has been sort of a chamber of commerce for the schools, right? That everything is peachy keen, come to our state, we have great schools, but they're taking a much more realistic view, and that's the leadership of Mike Morath, the commissioner there, who's just as smart as a whip. It's really interesting to see him in that room in control of the data. And Katie, you and I have made fun of this idea that sometimes we'll meet with people and no one understands data, and we just have complete control of it. But in a sense, that's what that room is like, is Mike Morath, he understands the data inside and out around the school. So if someone tries to bring up, you know, why don't we change this, it'd be better, he understands completely what is changeable and what's not changeable. But the fact that you have this commissioner who understands the data, but also understands that we need to hold our schools accountable, and we need to make our school system better for our children in the state of Texas. Super important. That could change the minute Mike Morath leaves, if and when he leaves. But for now, we can make it work to our advantage.
You know, we're talking about A through F and making sure that parents are aware of the quality of the education. I mean, I think we also need to go a step beyond. And this kind of plays into Election Day or whatnot. Next session, right? The legislature in January, the legislature convenes, and school finance and public education issues impacting children will be discussed. And it has to be more than let's just label this school a letter grade from A through F. But what resources are we going to invest in that? Because to some point, superintendents are trying the best that they can. Now, don't get me wrong. I think that, Bob, you talk all the time about leadership and the culture, and there's a lot of things that can be done at the local level that have nothing to do with funds, right? But money is required as well to push things further. And so one thing that helps the A through F, Bob, is early education, right? Quality pre-K, quality childcare. Children at Risk has been doing a Texas tour, 9 different cities, talking about the importance of quality early education. Can you speak a little bit to how that relates to the A through F system?
Yeah, so we especially know, right, 60% of our kids in the state of Texas are low-income children in our schools, or low-income children. And so for those kids, low-income kids, to be successful, they need to have a sort of a head start, if you will. And so the importance of early education, the importance of quality pre-K becomes paramount. And we know that when we get an early start at 2, 3, 4, and high-quality pre-K, all those things have an impact on all of our kids being successful academically. And in a sense, when we talk about good schools, they need to have that good start as well for those kids to be able to succeed academically. And so I think a lot of people get this. More and more people are getting this. And Mandy, to your earlier point, the idea of funding, I think our commissioner and these superintendents, they get this idea that we need more funding for our schools. And We need the funding to be in areas that are evidence-based, right, where the evidence shows this is going to work. And it's amazing when you're in a room with smart people like this where they talk through these things and it makes so much sense. And then you enter the world of politics where people spout things that don't make any sense at all and there's no backing for it. I just wish sometimes the world was all about this evidence. And this is why we do what we do, Mandy, Katie, right? It's the idea that we can use the evidence to try to make this world better, to try to make the world better for children. And we have a lot of work, though, to do when we talk about early education, when we talk about K-12 education, and when we talk about the grades that the TEA gives to our schools.
We're talking with Dr. Bob Sanborn, co-host of the Growing Up in America.
Yes. Usually, but today.
And President CEO of Children at Risk calling us on the road. Thank you so much, Bob, for calling in. You are missed, but we appreciate the update and always your insight on education.
Yeah, and I want to add to the chorus of voting. You know, we've seen such significant turnout, but we, you know, if you haven't been part of that big turnout, go vote. I know I like to vote on Election Day, so I'm going to show up tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock at my poll. But this, I mean, I could feel this in Austin, right? This whole idea, people get that this is an important election. And not that the KPFT audience doesn't vote, right? This is a listening audience that votes, but we just need to be reminding everyone that we can. Go out and vote tomorrow.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
Take care.
Children. Talk to you guys soon.
For children.
Safe travels.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. So that's really important. I'm excited that TEA is convening superintendents and experts in the education field from across the state to come together and really look at what can we do, how can we implement this, and what is needed in regards to quality schools.
That's right.
But they can only do so much, and we as citizens, we elect public officials to help guide the policies and the budgets. And so extremely important. We need both,
and
right?
And just to reiterate, those votes matter on the state level, but they also matter on the local level, right?
That's right.
So it's important that in every opportunity we get, and I'm taking it one step further, every opportunity we get to vote, we're mm-hmm. taking advantage of it.
There we go. Well said. We're gonna rock those two.
Electric Avenue. And then we'll take it higher.
When's the last time you heard that song?
It's been a while. It's been a decade or two. Thank you.
That's great. On the line right now, we have Stanley Leon, who is going to talk to us. He's an author of the book, No Place Like Hope, A Journey Through Poverty. Stanley, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Wonderful. Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
We're happy to get a chance to talk to you again, Stanley. I know you had the opportunity not too long ago to visit our Children at Risk offices, and you learned a little bit about what we're doing. We also had the chance to learn a little bit about you. If you could take just a second and tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, who you are, kind of who your story, and what's led you on the trajectory that you're on now.
Absolutely, and sure enjoyed my time with you guys out there too. Well, I'm from Houston originally, and the book that I wrote, No Place Like Hope, is really based on two things. It's a story and a message. The story is what I think you'd consider really a typical inner city story. Grew up in a dysfunctional home, lots of different variations of abuse, and which ultimately led to some bad decisions and the consequences of those decisions. The message, that's the story. The message of the story is really about education and about the power of a relationship that I developed with a teacher my senior year in high school. And that relationship is basically what has led me to the point where I'm at today. It completely transformed my life and sent me into a different direction.
So we were talking about education earlier and the importance of, you know, the Texas Education Agency and the important role of public officials making sound policies. But there is nothing you can compare to a teacher-student relationship and the power of those relationships that are just so impactful on many children's lives, right? I think we can all look back and remember some or few. And how easy it is for kids to get lost in the system without that relationship, huh, Stanley?
Absolutely. I think when it gets down to it, when it comes to kids, that the basis of success for them is the teacher-student relationship. I think when you progress up, the principal-teacher relationship has to be just as powerful. They have to feed their teachers,
mm-hmm.
and then continuing on up, you know, the superintendent has to have a safe and secure relationship with the district administrators.
Can you talk a little bit about your resiliency? It sounded like you had a rough childhood, right? And made some decisions and there were some consequences, but you had a bright future and you made it happen. Can you talk a little bit about resiliency in youth?
Absolutely. You know, the future became bright a little bit later. I tell you, it was a dark time for a while there. I was literally 17 and didn't expect to be anything other than, you know, a drug dealer, a criminal of some sort. I was a convicted felon at 17, just released out of jail. And I come from a family of criminals. My father is a multiple felon. I've got an uncle on death row at Iowa Park, Texas, the James L. Red unit, and another one who's a 12-time felon in Louisiana, and another uncle who's on lifetime parole in Florida, was a serial rapist. So for me, within the context of my family, crime was almost, you know, my arrest was almost like graduating for us. It was kind of the expectation. So for a long time, things were dark. And I always had a belief that there was a purpose for going through some of the things I did. Father was an abusive alcoholic, attempted to murder my mom numerous times in front of us. We were homeless, living in a car. I was locked in an insane asylum at 13, suicidal, went through all of these different physical abuses. But then when I met this teacher, my senior, Manda Simmons, who has actually become like a mother to me, everything just changed. I'd say that's when the future got bright. So my resiliency is really based in relationships. Up until I met Manda, I was kind of like a pinball, just getting bounced around, stumbling forward, and really continued to progress almost by accident, clinging to any positive feedback that I got from anyone.
So
when I made...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, when I met her, then that positive feedback became a stability point for me to be able to cling to and use as a guide.
So when you first kind of gave your introduction, you said you had what you think as a very, not typical, I won't say typical, but what many children face, especially in an urban setting, right, when they're facing the poverty. What is the message that you carry in the work that you're doing now to kids or to parents even, where the children find themselves in the same situation where you are? You have found, you know, you were fortunate to have Miss Simmons come into your life to really, you know, build that relationship. But for those that may not have that opportunity yet, what would be your message to them?
Great question. And I would say at some point we all have that opportunity. You're right. Maybe they haven't encountered it yet. But all of us, just because of the way society's set up, we all have an opportunity, even if it's a chance encounter, to encounter someone who cares, who's healthy, who's appropriate. So I think my message is there. It's twofold. With kids, I talk about personal responsibility, and it comes down to, hey, look, you know, there are going to be some things when you're young that you cannot control. And unfortunately, you just have to endure those things. But what you can control is the way you respond to them. And so, you know, allow yourself to feel what you feel, process through that, and own it. And same when it comes to relationships. Manda Simmons encountered a lot of kids and who really needed her. And unfortunately, not all their lives were changed. Yeah. So what it comes down to was the fact that I recognized that she had something that could lead me to where I wanted to be. And I took the initiative and instigated that relationship. And so with kids, I tell them, don't wait. Leaders initiate. Go out there, find the people who are living the lives that look like the ones you want, and ask them to lead you.
Stanley, I think that's a great message for children and for adults as well. And to remind the adults in this room and listening on these airwaves that we have the opportunity to be those change makers for kids. So if we have, when opportunities present themselves, take advantage of those opportunities to build a relationship with youth that perhaps you see struggling, or just even if they don't appear to be struggling, just to provide that meaningful support and guidance along what can oftentimes be a tumultuous path through, especially through our teenage years.
We're talking with Stanley Leon, the author of No Place Like Hope. Stanley, if people are interested in this book, where can they find it?
You can go on Amazon, find it there, or you can email me, stanley@thissideofhope.com.
That's great. Thank you so much. Thanks for sharing your story.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a great week.
You too.
You
bye-bye.
Too.
Such an inspirational message this afternoon to hear from Stanley.
Yep, it is. That's a lot going on.
It really
is.
A
story.
But we're always happy to hear him and hear his perspective there.
That's true. I hear we're trying to skip the thumbs up, thumbs down. And Dr. Bikini, we are so glad that you're here. We're going to get to you. So we would love for you to participate in the thumbs up, thumbs down segment. There we go. All right. So today we are talking about banning phones, computers, iPads, screens,
screen
televisions, whatever it is. banning computers, electronics in kids' rooms, bedrooms. Children's bedrooms.
Specifically, yes.
That's right. And we want you to call in, thumbs up, thumbs down, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. And let's see, it looks like we have a caller on right now. That was quick. Oh, 1 second. Hi, how are you doing today? Gretchen?
Hi.
Thanks for calling in. So are you thumbs up or thumbs down banning phones and computers in children's bedrooms?
I am thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Can you tell us why, Gretchen?
Absolutely. You know, there's been studies about blue light impeding sleep, and sometimes kids just get so wound up from their day that it really does take an hour or longer for them to get ready to go to sleep, and being and checking phones and being on iPads, even if they're saying, like, I'm reading or I'm, you know, listening to music, that just that blue light can inhibit good sleep. It can take longer to fall asleep, and then once you're asleep, you don't sleep as well. So that's one thing, just, you know, trying to keep kids healthy physically. And then also a lot of bullying happens after 11 p.m. And if your kid has a rule that their phone is off and plugged in before they go to bed, then they can never be blamed for anything, any drama that might happen. You know what I mean? They just stay out of it. So those are the two reasons that we have that rule in our house.
I think that's really interesting, actually, Gretchen. I think just back to what I was commenting on our last guest, I think that's a good rule for adults too, not the bullying after 11 part. I mean, that is a good rule too, but the fact that with the blue light and all that, how that can impact our sleep, we should all take
I had no idea that a blue light impacts your sleep. That's interesting.
New learning.
I know. But you know, it's so hard for kids too. And that's why I think that's why it would have to be like a strong and steady rule, because kids don't like to be disconnected, right? I'm going to miss out or whatever.
But
I'm
also,
like,
I think it's good for kids to be disconnected and to miss out every once in a while. That's kind of my old school mindset though.
There you go. Thanks for calling in, Gretchen.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. Dr. Bikini. What do you think?
Well, I'm thumbs up for banning all these electronics in kids' rooms, too, for very similar, you know, reasons. I think it's really important to be able to protect sleep and have good sleep hygiene. And I think that's one of the ways that
sleep hygiene.
Help, yes. To
really?
help
that's
kids.
What it's called.
Well, yeah. But it's really important for kids of all ages to get appropriate amounts of sleep. And I think that's one way we can help that happen.
And I think part of the reason that this has come up in light of a very unfortunate situation that happened just outside of Houston recently, to the point that Gretchen, the caller, made about the not good things happening after 11 p.m. There was a situation with a kid who was engaged with others online, and in the end, he lost his life as a result of the quote-unquote game that was being played that parents weren't aware of because it was later in the evening and parents were in bed. So the thought on banning it is, some people are saying you absolutely should had the, you know, the parents taken that out. Like, it sounds like the rule in Gretchen's home is that wouldn't have been an issue for this child. The flip side of that is, you know, I definitely know that people have the opposite perspective or opposite opinion of that as well. On the line we have Genesis.
Hi,
how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. So thanks for calling in. What's your opinion? Thumbs up, thumbs down on banning screens, all screens.
Electronics
in kids' rooms.
I don't think that it should be banned. I think that, like, we're in a place where, like, it's so integrated in, like, a lot of different aspects of our lives. And I feel like eventually, like, our children are going to grow up and they're going to go off to college and other places. And it's good that, like, now as younger children, they have, like, good, like, safety internet practices, and that they're able to handle it when they're with you, because they're eventually not going to be with you.
You bring up a really good point. So it's also parenting. I think we've talked a little bit about that, is what do you need to talk to your child about, right? What is appropriate? What is not? And you can't shield them from everything, right? And a lot of people, yeah, there's even exactly. conversations, depending on who you talk to, like true experts who are like, the whole nanny net and all this other stuff isn't good. You're just blocking it, and then the child will get into a situation and have interaction with inappropriateness and not know how They're to not, handle
that's
it.
That's right.
Right.
Well, and
I feel like there's got to be a medium.
Well, there has
Genesis
to be.
Genesis is saying.
There has to be, right? And I think, you know, I kind of smirked when Gretchen said, you know, bullying happens after 11. You know, we had a very hard and fast rule in my house growing up was, and especially during the school week, like during the week, nothing good ever happened after 10. Mm-hmm. Under no circumstances were we to be out of our house past 10 because nothing good would come of it. And if you're listening now, mom and dad, you're right. I learned that lesson the hard way on several occasions, but it's the same idea. But I had to go through that experience kind of to the point Stanley made, right? I had to break those rules. I had to learn some hard lessons, which fortunately didn't impact my entire future by breaking those rules that my parents had very intentionally set for me.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in, Genesis. So I see both sides. Okay, up next we have Charlie. How are you doing, Charlie? Thumbs up, thumbs down to banning electronics in children's room.
Well, how old are the children?
It could be open. We're saying if they're living in your house, school age.
Yeah, well, okay. Mm-hmm. Who's paying for the cell phone, and who's paying for the internet connection? Who's paying for electricity?
Oh, probably the parents,
if I had to guess.
Well, the parents. So my question is, why is this a debate? Is there any person who's a parent that would say, oh, no, children have the right? Is there anyone who is that insane?
Oh, I think that there's many people or parents who do not take out the electronics out of their bedroom, and not saying that it's a right issue, but that they don't think that there's any harm in it, right? Or not aware of the conversations going on. Or I'm sure kids, these days, kids have laptops that are given to them from school sometimes. And they're like, oh, well, they're in their room doing their homework. And it could be in high school, right? High school kids sometimes stay up later than parents, right? So they're like, you do your homework. I'm going to go to bed. Is that okay, or should it be more in a common area? I think electronics is a part of all of our lives.
It should be in a common area. It should be in the den or the living room.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. All right. So you are definitely thumbs up. That's what I'm hearing.
I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, I didn't have a TV in my room, but that was because everybody was broke, you know, decades ago. We could only afford one TV. That's why kids played out, you know, outside, because, you know, dad basically controlled the TV, okay?
So true.
Nowadays, you got your own TV, you got your, you know.
Well, that's what people were talking about. They're like, well, what about TVs? I'm like, kids don't have TVs these days. It's all about laptops and iPads.
That was such a big deal for us.
Yeah, like, we're talking screens. Thanks for calling in, Charlie.
Was pretty correct when, you know, she's saying about the blue light and all that, and it's mm-hmm. not good, and the bullying. Yeah, this is almost a non-issue. I think anyone who thinks thumbs down needs to get their head examined. I'm serious. This should be an easy one.
There we go. Thank you, says Charlie.
Thanks,
Thanks
Charlie.
For calling in. All right, now we have Johnny. How are you doing today, Johnny? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
First of all, I hope you all made your fundraising goal. Oh, so KPFT could stand there and you can keep advocating for everyone in the listening audience.
You are so kind. Thank you. Thank we you, appreciate Johnny. Everyone calling in and pledging their support.
I'm in agreement with that last caller and the first caller. Also, what we're dealing with is a TV on steroids. A generation or two ago, we had lots of good arguments against televisions in kids' bedrooms. Televisions were less interactive than they are now. So these are little TVs that are way too interactive, and they demand too much time and attention, and kids need their sleep. High school kids, that's another issue. You know, the parent knows how mature their high schooler is, so that's, you know, that's debatable. But we're not going to have any laws about this, so the conversation should be adequate.
There we go. Thanks for calling, Johnny. We appreciate it. Rachel, I have a question for you. So everyone, I'm thumbs up, right? Like, let's have rules and safety in the house. Kids don't need all this stuff. And everyone pretty much is agreeing with that. But the reality is what? You know that there's a bunch of parents who allow their kids to have electronics. Is this a conversation that you have with kids and parents? What is your perspective?
Absolutely. We try to talk about screen time at every well-child visit that we can. And I think it's important. I too am thumbs up and agree with lots of what has been said already. But I do feel like for those families who are going to allow this in the bedroom, it is a good opportunity for education and for autonomy and also for following up with, you know, those rules or those allowances that you do set is really teaching kids how to regulate, how to self-regulate their use of electronics.
And, you know, I think you bring up a good point, that self-regulation. I also think we're looking at a generation of young parents that have grown up with devices in their hands. I was not quite of that generation. So I think we have parents that have grown up having to self-regulate. So perhaps they will bring a different perspective and they will have different ways to implement that those regulations where perhaps they don't have to have a quote-unquote ban on electronics because they're modeling for their kids how to self-regulate.
There we go. That's right.
All right. Here's an opportunity where we have Dr. Bikini in the room. Yay! And Anne and Rachel. So
well,
great.
We always love being here. Thanks for having us today.
Yeah. Now, I know today we are going to be talking about a variety of issues. And we heard from Rachel, but Anne, did you have any comments that you wanted to share in regards to thumbs up, thumbs down, electronics in the room?
Yeah, I'm definitely thumbs up as well. And when I have well-child visits with especially parents of teenagers, I always like to discuss media-free zones and media-free times in their house. So, for example, I always like to encourage them to share a dinner together, you know, hopefully every day, and that would be considered a media-free zone. So no screens at the table. Everyone puts it in the middle, and everyone has a real conversation about their days.
Yeah, and that's probably harder for parents than kids, to be honest with you, right?
Exactly. So always encouraging good modeling on the parents' behalf is really important for the kids as well.
Dr. Bikini, guesstimate. So out of all the families and children that you see, percentage on who's implementing best practices around phone computer usage?
It's hard.
Like 25%?
What would you think? I think it's probably that low. Yes, it's hard.
It's low.
It's low.
All right.
Well, we have a bunch of hot topics to cover as time is ticking away. We want to dive into with you guys just some things that we've seen come up in the news as of lately. That includes new data about sugar intake in young children, which is always fascinating. Not a new topic, but something we've heard a lot about. Also, the increasing rate of accidental deaths in teens and the increased use of e-cigarettes and how that's kind of become a gateway. So we'll start right out of the gates talking, before we get into the e-cigarettes, talking a little bit about sugar. What's going on with sugar intake with kids in the news?
So we know that Americans in general are consuming too much sugar, and this is particularly worrisome in children, especially young children, as their kind of patterns for eating are being set at a young age. And so there was a recent study that came out looking at 800 infants and toddlers between 6 and 23 months, looking at how much sugar they consumed. And the statistics were surprising, even for me, but one number that I'll give you guys is 99% of children 19 to 23 months old average just over 7 teaspoons of added sugar in a given day, which is more than the amount in a Snickers candy bar.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So what is the recommended sugar
dosage consumption?
Is that right?
Sugar consumption. And what are the side effects if you get too many?
So it's a great question. It's actually kind of hard to find that exact number, and so I'm happy to share that with everyone today. So the daily recommended limit for added sugar for children and also for adult women is 6 teaspoons or less, and 1 teaspoon is 4 grams. So depending on how you're using the sugar, more likely people are looking at it on a package, and so that's kind of your helpful conversion there. And then for men, it would be 9 teaspoons or less in a day.
They always get more. That's unfair.
But I have a question. So you're saying added sugar. So are we having this problem because of processed food, or like an apple has sugar, a banana has sugar? Is that
entailed? Is that encompassing of what you're talking about? Or are we just talking about the stuff that they put on to make it taste good?
Yeah, we're more talking about those added sugars, not those that come from natural fruits and vegetables. As we know, those fruits, for example, have lots of sugar, but they come with lots of other good things like vitamins, minerals, fiber that changes the way the body processes that sugar.
Now, I've seen some of those Snickers commercials, and I've seen how Snickers can transform someone. I don't guess that's the kind of transformation we're looking for. But all kidding aside, I was surprised when you said the age group that you were looking at, right? To remind me, it was 9 months to 23 months?
Six months to 23 months.
We know that's all adult driven, right? The adults are the ones that are giving the food. I was thinking about elementary kids that might say have access to their Halloween candy from last week. What information do parents, or what can parents do to help with that? Because I think many may
not give them the stuff.
Well,
be aware, it's too much.
Some people may be doing so unknowingly, right? I mean, obviously a donut is a donut, but there are other things. It sounds like kids have to be getting the sugars somewhere else.
That's true.
So I would say Halloween is a great example of a time to teach your kids. And what I encourage families to do is teach kids different kinds of foods, our foods that we eat every day and foods that we have as a treat. And so I don't think it's realistic to say my kid is never going to have a piece of candy. They're never going to have a cookie for dessert. But it's teaching them and also modeling that this is something we have as a special treat today, but it's not something that we eat on a daily basis.
There we go. All right. We have multiple topics to cover in the next few minutes. So what about accidental deaths? What's going on?
Yeah. So there's a really scary report that came out over the summer. It looked at the total death rate among 10 to 19 year olds in the United States. And they saw that that number actually went down by 33% from 1999 to 2013. But from 2013 to 2016, it went up by 12%.
Well, and that's not what we want to see.
No, definitely
exactly.
Not.
Yeah, and the causes behind that, why it went up by 12%, the number one cause was accidental death, so that went up by 13%, followed by suicide and homicide.
Oh, that's not good. So accidental deaths, like people on their phones while they're driving and get into an accident?
Yeah, that actually is probably a big category, but they put it as a more general topic as traffic accident fatalities, drug overdoses, and then homicides and suicides, as opposed to what we traditionally think of like heart attacks or cancer. Those causes actually are not very common in this age group.
That's interesting.
It is interesting. And again, I think a lot of that goes back to what, as parents, we're teaching our kids, right? And being sure to emphasize how important it is when we see those vehicular accidents happening at such an increased rate so severely, you're making sure kids know what they should and shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, I'd like to hear from Anne, how do you counsel families about this? Because this is becoming such a big deal. I mean, the Chronicle has had this huge, a series of articles about all the traffic deaths that we have in our community. So how do you counsel parents and teenagers about this?
Yeah. So whenever I have a teenager in my clinic, I always ask them, do you have a license? Are you learning how to drive? And then I talk with both the parent and the teenager about safe driving practices. And the analogy I like to use is that learning to drive a car is like learning to operate heavy machinery. You have to be in the right state of mind. You can't be distracted. And you should give 100% of your attention to it because it is a dangerous task that we have to do every day. And a practical tip I like to tell my patients is to actually take their cell phone, put it in the glove compartment, or actually sometimes even put it in the trunk. That way there's no temptation to look at the screen, to respond to messages, things like that.
Another good tip for adults as well when driving. You also mentioned when you were talking about just in general the increased death, you talked a little bit about the increase in overdose deaths. What is the research saying there?
Yeah, so the research says that teen drug overdose deaths due to teen overdoses went up by about 19% over 1 year, which is quite a dramatic increase. It's very scary to see that. And actually, most of these deaths, 90% of them, are due to drug overdoses. So it's just heartbreaking to see. And it points again to the increased need for our community to support things like mental health initiatives, support for teenagers struggling with depression and anxiety, and increasing awareness of this issue.
Now, I feel like I'm going to be Mandy, and I'm absolutely going to put you on the spot. We know there's the opioid epidemic nationwide. From a policy standpoint, what can we do to put some safeguards in place to try and help address this? I know we can't fix it, and we certainly can't fix it overnight, and one policy never fixes anything. But what can we do to help in this situation?
Well, I think, I'm going to jump in here a little bit with the policy aspect. But one thing is we have to talk about it more. I think, there's been so much discussion on the national level and also on the state level mm-hmm. about addressing the opioid epidemic. But we can't forget that kids and adolescents are part of that as well. I think they often get left out of that conversation, and making sure we have more resources for individuals with substance abuse mm-hmm. Problems and targeting teen education, and either through schools or through other means, because this is frequently when the addiction starts, is in older adolescents. And I think looking at this data and seeing the increase rate, at this young age is pretty scary.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is our final four at 54 music. But I know that we wanted to talk about e-cigs. It's a topic, Claire, I know that you have been having a lot of conversations about it. Historically, the legislature is looking at it.
We'll tweet out some information, because there's, data is showing that we're going in the wrong direction. And so we'll tweet out some good resources for families and kind of bring that up next time if needed.
Sounds good. Thank you. All right. So now is an opportunity for us to get to know our guests a little bit better. So, Rachel, we're going to start with you. The first question that we have is, what was your favorite toy to play with as a kid?
So my favorite toy were my dolls, which actually also included my little sister. When she was a baby, I would line her up with my dolls.
That's great. Anne, what about you?
Probably my dog. I love to dress him up, and he always participated in all of our, play acting things.
I love the creativity here between the dog and the little sister.
That's funny.
That's great.
That's great. And Dr. Bikini, My Little Pony. No.
Well, I usually say Strawberry Shortcake.
Strawberry Shortcake.
Both.
Yep, that's good. All right. So we've asked you so many times. All right. Second question is, what did you want to be when you were growing up? Ian?
Marine biologist.
Oh, nice. Well, you're pretty close to that.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Instead of science. Take care of babies.
Yeah, there we go. Rachel?
Believe it or not, I actually always wanted to be a pediatrician. I have a school report that I wrote when I was 7 that actually talked about it. So.
Wow. That's awesome.
That's so great. I love that. All right. Next question. What was your favorite book to read as a child?
The Big Friendly Giant by Roald Dahl.
It's a classic.
All Roald Dahl books.
Oh, yes, of course.
Rachel?
I loved all Dr. Seuss books.
I was just reintroduced to Shel Silverstein this weekend, which was a nice stroll down memory lane as
that
a child.
Does bring memories.
Right? And last but not least, what was your favorite movie when you were a kid? Rachel?
Really, any Disney princess movie.
Princess.
Same. I liked Aladdin.
Ooh, I liked Aladdin. What about you, Dr. Bikini?
Yes, I really loved The Little Mermaid. And I also loved Oliver and Company, because I also loved pets. Still Disney theme.
And Katie, what about you? What was your favorite movie?
My favorite movie, Goonies.
Goonies!
Still one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, that's telling. It is.
Always looking for a little adventure.
I can't believe that our hour's already gone. It goes by
Can
so
we have
quickly.
5 more minutes? No, guess not.
But as always, it has been great here to have you, Katie, and Claire, and Anne, and Rachel. Thank you for joining us. I know that our listeners really appreciate all the insight that you have. And so if you can get information, we can definitely, y'all can tweet it out, but we can put it on our Facebook page here. For more facts and information on children, visit us at children@risk.org. Follow us on Twitter and listen in every Monday at 3 o'clock. If you'd like to learn more about Children at Risk, please email us at radio@children@risk.org. Thank you, Letty, for everything today. And hug your kids, and we'll see you next time on Growing Up in America on Pacifica Radio.